We'll learn the story about World Radio Labs in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with this rain replay from 1997 with Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ, who founded Wholesale Radio Laboratories, the forerunner to World Radio Labs in Council Bluffs, Iowa. For all his contributions to ham radio, Meyerson was named the 1997 Ham of the Year at the Dayton Hamvention.
This is an outstanding honor. It's a feeling of satisfaction that maybe I have accomplished something during my lifetime. I'm very honored, very humble about it.
Radio pioneer Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ, known for his innovations in the manufacture of crystals during World War II and manufacture of affordable amateur radio transmitters in the 50s under the Globe name. In a conversation with amateur radio newsline producer Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, Meyerson reminisced about his early exposure to radio.
I was just a young fellow. I was about 8 years old when, at school, there was a gentleman that was a friend of my teacher, Mrs. McIntosh, and he was telling us all about World War I. He just returned, and that he thought there was going to be a future in broadcast stations to be broadcasting on the air. And I was fascinated to hear about that. Started looking at magazines and things of that kind, and I started to log the stations as they came on the air. Of course, you know, back in the 20s, there wasn't much on the air, and I was privileged to receive KDKA when they first went on the air in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and caused quite a consternation in the neighborhood because very few people had receivers of any kind. I had found a circuit on a 1-2 regenerative reset. A friend of mine who's a couple of years older than me helped me build it. I didn't know much how to use a soldering iron, got acquainted reading the circuits and so forth. So that's how I got started. Because of my listening, I picked up a W9 station in Missouri, and that was a strange sound, call letters to me, and I found out he was a radio ham, and so I looked into that, and 6 months later I got my license. That was in 1928. In 1935, my dad wanted me to go into the grocery business. I told him that I thought there was a need for a radio distributor, a radio dealer. There wasn't anybody around. I had to wait 2 or 3 weeks if I ordered something, and sometimes it was back ordered. He said, "Well, how much do you think it'll cost?" And I said, "Well, about $500. Of course, back in the 30s, $500 was like $5,000 today. He said, "I'll tell you what, I'll give you $1,000, and when you lose that, you'll come in the grocery business with me," and that's why I got started. My business was called Wholesale Radio Labs. I thought that wholesale would attract people and that the labs would indicate that I may have some engineers around.
Did you?
I was the only half-baked engineer. It was later in the growth of my company that I started hiring engineers, and that was interesting as to how I started building equipment. I put some kits together in 1937, and then the fellows would say, "Leo, how about wiring those kits?" So I decided, well, there must be a need for wired units, and that's how I got started. Everything was really going very, very well, and then World War II started and put me out of business.
Why did World War II put you out of business?
Because I was specializing mostly with amateur radio. When the war started, we were told to dismantle our equipment, take down our antennas, box our equipment, and have it ready for the government in case they needed it. I could have gone into the Army. I had a captaincy offered me. And guess where? The Philippine Islands. But my wife says, "You're not going. You got a son and you got another child on the way. You're not going to go until they draft you." So I was left with a dilemma, and I heard quartz crystals were needed. Got in touch with a friend of mine who had a gravity saw in his basement. He used to cut quartz. And I used to finish some of the quartz crystals when I first got started. We got in touch with the Signal Corps. The Signal Corps quizzed us quite a bit, wanted to know the name of our crystal company, and we said we didn't have any, but we thought we could make them. They weren't very helpful, but they finally decided if we think we can make them, get in touch with Motorola, which we did. Went through the same thing with them. Finally, they said, here's five frequencies. Make three of each and bring them to us as soon as possible. And that's what we did. Worked for 3 days, three nights, got the crystals ready, took them in, saw Dan Noble, who was the chief engineer, brought them in the morning, and about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he came out with a big smile on his face, says, you guys passed the test, and became one of the largest crystal manufacturers in the country. We had 550 people working for us. Got the Army Navy E in 1943. One of the reasons we got the Army Navy E was we converted drill presses with plates, and you put carborundum and oil and put about 8 wafers in a mat, and you grind for a certain length of time depending on the thickness of the crystal. And it was a very tedious job, took hours of time, and we said there have to be a better way. And we decided the piezoelectric quality of a crystal means that you can squeeze a crystal and get a voltage, or you can excite the crystal with voltage. So with that in mind, we thought with the carborundum rolling in there, maybe we can attach a receiver. And by golly, it worked. And it saved countless, countless hours of time. The minute the government heard about that, they sent all the other crystal companies over to us. I think there was 13 or 14 at the time. There weren't any secrets during the war.
What did that do to the efficiency of the plant?
Well, it increased the efficiency almost 4 times. Per person, we saved about 12 hours a day. We were able to turn out about 35,000 to 40,000 crystals a month.
You're listening to a conversation Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, had with Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ, recipient of the DARA 1997 Ham of the Year Award. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report.
You are listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
When the war ended, I knew there would be a big demand for my equipment because I had a taste of it before the war. My partner went on with the crystal plant, and I went back to the distributing business, the dealer business, and the manufacturing business. And we finally decided that the manufacturing business was growing so big that we'd separate it from the dealer business and formed Globe Electronics. The Globe name was a good choice because we had called our equipment Globe Scouts, Globe Champs, Globe Kings. The Globe Scout became one of the best sellers in the country, and we sold over 50,000 of those. We put out a Globe Chief, too, which is very popular, and that was a CW transmitter. But the Globe King, there are still many of those still on the air. Sold about 28,000 of those all over the world. In 1952, I had heard about single sideband. Got in touch with a fellow called Fred Berry, understood single sideband and was an expert. And I said, Fred, would you build me a 50-watt rig? And he said, sure. And he brought it in 1953, about the latter part of December. I looked it over and thought it was pretty good. And I said to my chief engineer, who hated single sideband, take this home and check it out for me. And that's the last I ever saw of it. We had a fire. World Radio burned to the ground the day before we were to move. We had been packing, getting ready to move into our new building. And about 6 a.m. in the morning, I got a call that World Radio was on fire. And I said, which one? He said, the old one. After the fire, we never could find this little single sideband transmitter. I had the idea, and I think it probably cost me quite a bit because I thought that single sideband was going to take over one of these days. So when I sold Globe, I decided to go into single sideband. I hired an engineer from Collins, and he had been working on the KWM-2A. He brought out the Galaxy, and we were quite successful with the Galaxy. We started in 61, and we sold out to High Gain in 1970, and that's when I decided maybe I should retire. We never claimed to be a Collins company. We were more like a Ford. We wanted to make a rig that everybody could afford and still a quality piece of equipment that would hold up. Bill, you know, I've taken some safaris with radio. One of them, Belize. We worked a lot of DX, of course. But the thing that impressed me was the Catholic priest that set this up for us, he set the antennas up for us, and we were in a mountain retreat. And he took me around to some of the small villages, and wouldn't you know, I saw Globe Scouts and Globe Kings used in a commercial manner. Police department, the fire departments, and you name it. And they all had my equipment because they couldn't afford commercial equipment. And by golly, they told me it was working fine. I had the same thing happen to me with banks in South America using our equipment to contact each other because there wasn't too much in the way of telephone systems. I'm talking now several years ago.
Today, those same banks, I would suspect, in the middle of nowhere, now have computers, they have satellite dishes, and they talk to each other on satellite telephones. You've lived through all this change. What does it mean, and where are we going?
That's a very good question, and nobody really knows the complete answer to that. But I'll tell you what holds amateur radio together, in my opinion, is the wonderful friendships that you make via amateur radio. These are friendships that start when you don't even know what the fellow looks like or what the woman looks like. And finally, in time, you get to meet them. It always was a thrill to me. And that's amateur radio personified.
That's a wrap on the story behind one of the legends in ham radio, Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ, a true ham radio pioneer who became a Silent Key in 2011 at the ripe old age of 100 years. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015 Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for all those connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, hoping you'll be making the annual Ham Radio Pilgrimage to Dayton, Ohio, for the Hamvention coming up May 15th through 17th. Keep an eye out for the Rain and Gateway 160-meter radio newsletter booth. More details next week. This is The Rain Report, available on Twitter at #TheRainReport and online 24/7 on TheRainReport.com.
Leo Meyerson, W0GFQ, 1997 recipient of the Ham of the Year Award. Sponsored by DARA, the Dayton Amateur Radio Association in Dayton, Ohio. The preceding interview was conducted by Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, producer of Amateur Radio Newsline. Congratulations, Leo. For the Rain Report, I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP.